There are things in that paper that nobody knows but me, or ever will. Behind that outside pattern, the dim shapes get clearer every day. It is always the same shape, only very numerous. And it's like a woman stooping down and creeping about behind that pattern. I don't like it a bit. Welcome back. You're listening to Tales from the Witch House, and this is episode 5. Today we'll be talking about The Yellow Wallpaper, written by Charlotte Perkins Gilman in 1901. Now, I really love this story, but for this format, we're just going to talk about the plot points without me speculating, because it's very important to wait to the end for that process. The story is narrated by a woman who may be named Jane. We're not really sure about that, but she is an upper-class woman who is married to a doctor named John. They have a baby, and Jane is undergoing treatment for depression. The story is her secret diary that she keeps. They just moved into a new house for the summer, and Jane thinks the house is grand and beautiful, but that there's something slightly off about it. Right away, we can tell from the writing that she has an active imagination. She also introduces us to the fact that she is being treated for depression by her husband, John, and her brother, who is a physician as well. She is forbidden to do much of anything, including working and writing. She's uncomfortable with the situation, but can't really do anything about it. This is why the diary is a secret. If a physician of high standing and one's own husband assures friends and relatives that there's nothing really the matter with one but temporary nervous depression, a slight hysterical tendency, what is one to do? My brother is also a physician and also of high standing, and he says the same thing. So I take phosphates or phosphites, whichever one it is, and tonics and journeys and air and exercise, and I'm absolutely forbidden to work until I am well again. Personally, I disagree with their ideas. Personally, I believe that congenial work, with excitement and change, would do me good. But what is one to do? She does try to follow his recommendations for her treatment besides the writing, so she doesn't want to talk about her condition much more, and moves on to describing the house. At first, the descriptions are basic and describe a grand and beautiful house. There are some strange things here and there, however. She mentions bars on the windows and rings and things on the bedroom walls, and of course, the yellow wallpaper. The paint and paper look as if a boys' school had used it. It is stripped off, the paper, in great patches all around the head of my bed, about as far as I can reach, and in a great place on the other side of the room, low down. I never saw worse paper in my life. One of those sprawling, flamboyant patterns, committing every artistic sin. It is dull enough to confuse the eye in following, pronounced enough to constantly irritate and provoke study, and when you follow the lame, uncertain curves for a little distance, they suddenly commit suicide, plunge off at outrageous angles, destroy themselves in unheard of contradictions. The color is repellent, almost revolting. A smoldering, unclean yellow, strangely faded by the slow turning sunlight. It is a dull yet lurid orange in some places, a sickly sulfur tint in others. As the first 2 weeks of summer pass by, we see Jane getting better at hiding her journal from John. She seems frustrated by his controlling ways, and her fascination with the wallpaper increases from dislike to something more akin to fear. John knows about her feelings towards the wallpaper, but refuses to let her move rooms or to repaper it as not to feed into her delusions. Her baby is taken care of by a woman named Mary. Jane says being around him makes her too nervous. Jane enjoys looking out the window of her room at the grounds and imagining other people out there, but John cautions her that it feeds her imagination and makes her condition worse. She agrees that writing does take a toll on her, so perhaps he is right. Jane also mentions how, in her childhood, her imagining things in the dark could send her into fits of terror. She is describing the room when she notes that the wallpaper is torn in places and there are deep gouges on the floor, and that the furniture is also fixed into place. But it doesn't bother her, only the wallpaper does. This paper looks to me as if it knew what a vicious influence it had. There is a recurrent spot where the pattern lulls like a broken neck, and two bulbous eyes stare at you upside down. I got positively angry with the impertinence of it and the everlastingness. Up and down and sideways they crawl, and those absurd, unblinking eyes are everywhere. There's one place where two breaths didn't match, and the eyes go all up and down the line, one a little higher than the other. I never saw so much expression in an inanimate thing before, and we all know how much expression they have. She is soon interrupted by Jenny, John's sister, who is taking care of the house and being Jane's nurse. After the 4th of July, Jane writes that her family has been visiting, leaving her very tired, even though she doesn't do much. John says if she does not get better faster, he is going to send her to another physician named Ware Mitchell, and of course, she doesn't want to go. She starts to speak fondly now of the wallpaper when she writes about it, and she's starting to see things clearly in the pattern. Specifically, she sees a woman stooped down and creeping behind the pattern, as if the pattern is bars on a cage. There are things in that paper that nobody knows but me, or ever will. Behind that outside pattern, the dim shapes get clearer every day. It is always the same shape, only very numerous. And it is like a woman stooping down and creeping about behind the pattern. I don't like it a bit. Every day she spends alone in the room causes her fixation on the wallpaper to grow stronger. When before we could see that she knew that her fixation on the wallpaper was just a strange thing that was happening, now there's no difference between her writing about Ginny and John and her writing about the things in the wallpaper. It's all part of her reality. John was asleep, and I hated to waken him, so I just kept still and watched the moonlight on that undulating wallpaper till I felt creepy. The faint figure behind seemed to shake the pattern, just as if she wanted to get out. I got up softly and went to feel and see if the paper did move, and when I came back, John was awake. Once again, Jane asks John about leaving to return to her home, but he tells her the repairs on their house are not done, and he, as her doctor, can tell that she's improving here, that she has more color to her and more of an appetite. She does her best to tell him that she does not agree, but he ends up silencing her concerns and making her feel as if she can't speak to him about it at all. So of course, I said no more on that score, and we went to sleep before long. He thought I was asleep first, but I wasn't. I lay there for hours trying to decide whether that front pattern and the back pattern really did move together or separately. In the next entry, Jane describes the wallpaper in length and says that it changes pattern with the light. During the day, the pattern holds the woman inside still, and at night, the pattern turns into bars and the woman behind is able to creep around. Here is a description of how she sees the pattern during the day. The color is hideous enough and unreliable enough and infuriating enough, but the pattern is torturing. You think you have mastered it, but just as you get well underway in following, it turns a back somersault, and there you are. It slaps you in the face, knocks you down, and tramples upon you. It is like a bad dream. The outside pattern is a florid arabesque, reminding one of a fungus. If you can imagine a toadstool in joints, an intermingling string of toadstools, budding and sprouting in endless convulsions, why, that is something like it. Here is how she describes the change in the pattern. When the sun shoots in through the east window, I always watch for that first, long, straight ray. It changes so quickly that I never can quite believe it. That is why I watch it, always. By moonlight, the moon shines in all night when there is a moon. I wouldn't know it was the same paper. At night in any kind of light, in twilight, candlelight, lamplight, and worst of all by moonlight, it becomes bars. The outside pattern, I mean, and the woman behind it is as plain as can be. By daylight she is subdued, quiet. I fancy it is the pattern that keeps her so still. It is so puzzling. It keeps me quiet by the hour. Jane starts lying down more and more, pretending to sleep, while she stares and thinks about the paper and the woman behind it. John says it is good for her and encourages her to sleep for an hour after every meal, but she can't really sleep. Jane knows that it isn't good for her, but writes that she's becoming afraid of John and a little afraid of Jenny. She says she has come into the room and caught John staring at the paper, and once she caught Jenny touching the paper, saying that there was yellow stains all over Jane and John's clothes and that they should be more careful. Jane ponders if this was innocent or if they know something about the paper. Did not that sound innocent? But I know she was studying the pattern, and I am determined that nobody shall find it out but myself. Jane writes that her life is much more exciting now, that the wallpaper and the mystery gives her something to look forward to. She is eating better, and John is happy with her progress, though she takes great care in keeping the wallpaper to herself so he does not take her away from there. She has a week left in the home and thinks that will be enough time to figure out what is going on. Now she starts to notice that the wallpaper has a smell to it. She can smell it all over the house, and even when she was outside of the house on a walk or on a ride, she can even smell it in her hair. She can't describe the smell other than the color yellow. She considers burning the house down to be rid of it. Jane finds a new development in the room, a streak on the wall towards the bottom that goes all around the perimeter of the room, behind all the furniture except for the bed, as if someone has been crawling around on the floor, rubbing against the walls. There is a very funny mark on this wall, low down, near the mop board, a streak that runs around the room. It goes behind every piece of furniture, except the bed. A long, straight, even smooch, as if it had been rubbed over and over. I wonder how it was done, and who did it, and what they did it for. Round and round and round and round and round and round. It makes me dizzy. One night, she watches all night and discovers that the pattern does move because the woman behind it shakes it and crawls through the tangled pattern. The front pattern does move, and no wonder, the woman behind shakes it. Sometimes I think there are a great many women behind it, and sometimes only one. And she crawls around fast, and her crawling shakes it all over. Then, in the very bright spots, she keeps still. And in the very shady spots, she just takes hold of the bars and shakes them hard. And she is all the time trying to climb through, but nobody could climb through that pattern. It strangles so. I think that's why it has so many heads. They get through, and then the pattern strangles them and turns them upside down and makes their eyes white. If those heads were covered or taken off, it would not be half so bad. Jane writes that she knows that the woman or women get out of the paper during the day. She sees her outside of the windows, creeping along the road or in the garden. When a carriage comes by, the woman hides. The woman creeps so quickly that when Jane turns her head to look out of the other window, the woman's already there, as if she got there faster than Jane could turn her head. She's also developing a strong distrust for John. It is the same woman, I know, for she's always creeping, and most women do not creep by daylight. I see her in that long shaded lane, creeping up and down. I see her in those dark grape arbors, creeping all around the garden. I see her on that long road under the trees, creeping along, and when a carriage comes, she hides under the blackberry vines. I don't blame her a bit. It must be very humiliating to be caught creeping by daylight. I always lock the door when I creep by daylight. I can't do it at night, for I know John would suspect something at once. And John is so queer now that I don't want to irritate him. I wish he would take another room. Besides, I don't want anybody to get that woman out at night but myself. I often wonder if I could see her out of all the windows at once. But turn as fast as I can only see out of one at a time. And though I always see her, she may be able to creep faster than I can turn. I have watched her sometimes away off in the open country, creeping as fast as a cloud shadow in a high wind. Jane says that she only has 2 days to get the paper off, and she thinks John is on to her. He is asking her a lot of questions and asking Jenny questions about her. She says that he pretends to be loving and kind, but she can see right through him. Jane says she knows that sleeping under the paper is affecting them both. It is the last day they will be in the house, but John is staying in town overnight. Jenny wants to sleep with Jane, but Jane tells her no. As soon as night falls and the woman starts to shake the paper, Jane runs over to help her. She spends all night ripping off large chunks of the wallpaper with the help of the woman trapped inside. In the morning, people come to move furniture, and Jenny is surprised by what she did, but doesn't seem alarmed. Jane vows to finish the job before they leave. Jenny tries to get her to leave the room, but she insists she would sleep well in the empty room, so Jenny leaves her. Jane locks the door because she does not want anyone but John to come in, and has a rope that she hid from Jenny that she plans to use to tie the woman from the wallpaper up if she tries to leave. With no furniture, she can't reach very high to remove the paper, and the bed is nailed to the floor. She gets so frustrated when trying to move it that she actually bites a piece of the headboard, hurting her teeth. She manages to peel off all the paper she could standing up and says the pattern enjoys it. She is very angry and considers jumping out the window, but cannot due to the bars. She is afraid to even look out of the window because of all the creeping women, who creep so quickly. I wonder if they all come out of that wallpaper, as I did. But I am securely fastened now by my well-hidden rope. You don't get me out in the road there. I suppose I shall have to get back behind the paper when it comes night, and that is hard. It is so pleasant to be out in this great room and creep around as I please. I don't want to go outside. I won't, even if Jenny asks me to. For outside, you have to creep on the ground, and everything is green instead of yellow. But here, I can creep smoothly on the floor, and my shoulder just fits in that long smooch around the wall, so I cannot lose my way. Then John is at the door, and of course, it is locked. He pounds at the door, yelling for her to open it, but she does not answer him until she hears him yelling for an axe. She then calmly tells him where the key is hidden outside of the door, and has to do so several times before he goes to get it and opens the door. "What is the matter?" he cried. "For God's sake, what are you doing?" "I kept on creeping, just the same, but I looked at him over my shoulder." "I've got out at last," said I. "In spite of you and Jane, and I've pulled off most of the paper, so you can't put me back." Now, why should that man have fainted? But he did, and right across my path by the wall, so that I had to creep over him every time. Okay, and that's the end. So I purposely held off explaining a lot of the story as we went through it because it's better this way. At first glance, this is a story about a woman's struggle with mental health issues and her downward spiral into madness. However, this story shows us much more than that. The author, Gilman, was treated for depression by an actual doctor named Ware Mitchell using the resting cure that is described here. The treatment was cruel and worsened her condition. Mitchell actually stopped using the treatment after reading her story. The themes of husband dominance and the idea that women had to fake this happy facade of marriage lend into her struggles with mental illness. Jane is an intelligent woman longing for stimulation. You can see it in the ironic jabs alliterated throughout the story. The thing I love most about this story is not just the creepy imagery, but the reality in which it was gripped. Upon a second reading, a lot of things will jump out at you. The furniture being attached to the walls and the bed secured to the floor seem to reflect that the room is made for someone suffering from mental illness, though Jane refers to it as having been a child's room. I hope you enjoyed this one. It is one of my absolute favorites, and I really suggest that you read it all the way through. I will put a link for you to read it online for free, and maybe one day I'll do a full narration of it. Thanks for being here. I'll see you next time.